dad's nickname was easy. You had the point of view that the world likes you and the gumption to say, "Don't tell me what to do." Well, if you are like my guest, Cynthia Dagnall Myron, you would go out and live a life filled with huge ups and downs and exude joy even in the downs. I am Becca Lewis, and this is the Shift the Story podcast. Cynthia's life is definitely about shifting the story, and it's filled with inspiration and hope. I loved her stories, and I know you will too. As I was preparing for our time together, Cynthia, I became completely flummoxed because I didn't know where to start. We met because we're both writers, but you're a writer, and that's like saying a butterfly is a bug. There's so much more. So I kind of put together a quick overview. Here's a really quick one. So you grew up without much. You became an award-winning writer for the Chicago Sun-Times and Rolling Stones, just to name a few. You married a Hopi artist. You moved to a reservation. Roger Ebert was a great friend. You're a screenwriter and a teacher. You've been a principal, and now you're a writer for Huffington Post. And I think you just converted to Catholicism.
I did.
So I was like, oh my God, what is in between? With all that, you know, that's the quick things. There must be a tons of in-between things. So if anybody could ever talk about making life shifts, I'm thinking it's you.
I've made a few, yeah.
Just a few. So the big broad question is, how do you see yourself and how do you do that? And did one have more of an impact on another? And really, it's completely where you want to take this, because everything you say will be inspiring.
I don't even know where to start. That's great.
I know.
I just always, I will say this, and I think some people, I'm African American, and instead of, you know, some people might think, especially the neighborhood that I grew up in, that it would be limiting or that it would stop me. And instead, I was kind of determined to make sure that it didn't. So I tended to wind up being the only Black kid doing whatever. You know, my mother put me in the Chicago Conservatory of Music, and I was the only little Black face there. And then I went to a really amazing high school in Chicago that was mostly Jewish, brilliant kids, and I was the only little Black face there. It was just kind of this challenge to the world. You're like, I am going to make something of this. Thou shalt not hold me back. So I always had this gumption, you know, about life. You know, I'm going to go out there and do everything I've ever dreamt of. And I did.
And you did.
I did.
And you did. And then you probably did some things you didn't think about doing. I mean, I think that I live my life like I wrote a book once about doing things the hard way. And I'm pretty sure I did that for most of the beginning of my life. Mm-hmm. And just because, you know, like, well, what will happen if I do this?
Exactly. So, threw myself, into some really interesting situations doing that.
Yeah. So I think you threw yourself into more situations than even I did, because I'm like, how did you go from one to another? And I know that some people have that, as you said, gumption. Mm-hmm. Maybe for some reason, both you and I went, I think we're both short too.
Yep.
But so maybe both we said, well, you don't tell me I can't, because that was pretty much.
Yeah, that was exactly
said,
right.
Don't tell me I can't. But I mean, not everybody has that don't tell me I can't. But even that means you still had to work through tons of things. Mm-hmm.
I don't.
How did you do it?
I think my dad, I'm fortunate in the father. They say you choose your parents. And my father was an amazing man. He didn't tell me a lot of the things. He, too, did things that you didn't expect. And I didn't find out about them till he was really old in some cases. But he left the South in the Great Migration by hoboing. He hopped freight. At a time when this is a Black male, you know, with people who are not happy to see him hop on this freight. And he was like that. And when my mom would try to hold me back and say, well, the world is, you know, be careful. And oh my gosh. And my dad would always sort of pat me on the back. He took me fishing with him. I was his favorite son since he didn't have boys. And he sort of taught me to be fearless. It was the most amazing, without speaking, by the way, it was all the way he was. His nickname was Easy, and life was easy for him, even though he was a black male in a very interesting world. He just didn't see it. He just didn't care. And if I would, I'd say, Daddy, I want to do whatever. And he'd sort of stare at me. And if he thought it was weird, he wouldn't even say anything. He would just kind of watch me. And then I'd come back after I'd skinned up my knees really bad. And he'd go, hey, so how'd that work out for you?
Oh,
and
that.
We'd debrief. And I'd say, oh, it sucked. You know, and he would say, I saw that one coming. But, you know, and we would talk about it. So he was my, I don't know, he supported me in everything that I did in a quiet, wonderful way.
Wow. That, I do think that as much as people might say, I don't want to admit it, I do think we choose our parents.
Yes, I think so.
So, what a great name for a parent, Easy. Wow.
I know. Even in the war, I met some of his friends, and they said he slept through some of the biggest firefights, you know, when they got into these really big ones in World War II. My dad would say, well, if we're going to die anyway, I'm going to be sleeping before they get me. And he would just lay down and sleep. So they couldn't.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what he was like. I mean, he's just an amazing man. My mother was, too, in a different way, and I know that now because I got a lot of my absolute strength, and you know, nothing can keep me down from her. But Daddy was my Buddha side.
Oh my gosh, I think that everybody listening is going, I wish I could meet your dad.
I know, he was just amazing. And I you know, I don't know how he did it. You know, I think about what he went through and the experiences he had, but he did, and he passed that on to me.
So did he get to see all your crazy things you did?
Most of them. He was there for the Sun Times. He didn't understand. He was so funny because, as worldly as he could be, the Sun Times and the writing sort of mystified him a little bit because he didn't understand that those were real jobs. And, you know, he kind of wanted me to, you know, get a job with the government and be taken care of. And so when I jumped, but he helped me because he helped me pay for a trip to England when I was like 17 years old. I decided I wanted to go to England because the Beatles and all that stuff were happening. And even though he thought that was a little dicey too, he jumped in and said, yeah, I've been there. It's a beautiful place. Go. But I could see that he was a little bit nervous about
that. Yeah. 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 I grew up with a dad that was not easy, but he did expect a lot of things. And when I did things that he was worried about, I think he wanted the same thing as your dad. Mm-hmm. Is like, why can't you pick something that's safer?
Exactly. Go out there and get something secure. I was going to teach, and I taught for 2 years, actually, right out of college. And that was okay with him. So when I got the Sun Times gig and started writing in earnest, he was really not happy about that. That didn't seem secure enough.
Wow. Well, then he must. I'm glad that he didn't see all the rest of the stuff. Because
I know he learned. He actually got used to it. He came out to Hopi once and to meet his granddaughter and absolutely loved it. My mother did the same thing. It was like Mississippi to her. So she had no problem with that. The little shacks and, you know, the villages. They were both far more at home with that life than I expected them to be.
Wow. So you had that at home base.
Yes.
So that was helpful.
I did.
That's a big thing. But even with all that, okay, I guess I just have to ask, I think the last shift might be, the last one that you must have done was, didn't you just convert to Catholicism?
I did.
How did that happen?
I'm going to say, now there's a couple of things. I was almost led into it, and it's a long story that I'm not even going to try to tell. But I had a really serious illness a few years ago. That it's very rare. It's Stevens-Johnson syndrome. It's something, you have to look it up. It's an awful, awful thing. I was very lucky. I was not maimed by it. I lived through it. And some of the things that I did, it was like there was a voice telling me to do things that the doctors didn't necessarily agree with. Mm-hmm. And it worked. Ebert was with me through this. He was in the process of dying, actually, and we were emailing back and forth, and I would tell him what I was doing, and he encouraged it, even though he was not religious. And I've just, there was something going on that I couldn't explain. And this later in life, I began to get little signals to investigate this, investigate that. And I've always been into, I'm gonna make some people really mad. I've always been into the voodoo of Catholicism, the candles and the incense and all of
Oh.
that, because that comes from my African roots, I think. And also from Native
Yes,
American
yes.
things that I'd seen. The natives have katsinas and the Catholics have saints and blah, blah, blah. So all these things fit, but I grew up with Jesus. My mother was a Baptist. I was not anything like that. But it sort of all came together suddenly. And when I studied, I was looking into religion and being led in this direction, and Catholicism for me, because of all the mysticism, fit better. I could never be a Baptist. I can't be an evangelical, but this, the mystical side of it, being able to kneel somewhere with the candles and every and talk to God, appealed to me because he'd been talking to me. I felt like he was literally in my house.
Oh, I don't think first, I don't think you really care if you make anybody mad, but second, I don't think so. I don't think they will, because I think what you're describing is something that wherever we find it, that's what we all love. And I'm thinking of one specific person who I know listens to this podcast, who's going to say yes, because I know that's what she loves about
Yeah,
Catholicism.
yeah.
Got to say that word
It
right.
yes.
That ritual and all the glory or surrounding it is, it does, it brings you. I think I grew up as a Catholic, and I know that I love that part, that because I think that brings you back to that same sense of meditation or
It
that
really
same
does.
sense of listening within.
I need the place. And I walked into, there's a church here that what actually happened was my daughter's boyfriend is a Catholic, and he took us to midnight mass. And I walked through the doors of that cathedral and said, "Oh, he's standing right here. Oh my God." I could just feel Jesus, which sounds, my friends go, "Oh my, I can't believe you're saying these things." But I really did. It was like going home. It was like he was waiting for me, saying, "There she is."
Oh, what a beautiful experience that must
It
have
was.
been.
It was. And so after that, I was kind of hooked. I fell in love with him still. And it's very real to me. It's not the sort of the holy role. I don't speak in tongues or any of the things my mom and those guys used to do, but he's around. He's my buddy. He's the first person I want to talk to in the morning. Which is just sounds even to me this sounds weird, but it just happened, and it's so real that and miraculous things do happen. Catholics have this. It's very interesting. I was telling my daughter just the other day that we, like the Hopi, make things happen. When we pray, stuff happens. And it's the first time in my life that I've ever seen that. I ask and I get it. The Hopis do the same thing. They dance and it rains. So for me, this isn't strange to me. This is the way spirit works, or the universe works. And also it fits everything I've ever known about spirituality and science, mind you. All of it fits. So the fact that it fits so well was perfect for me at this age. And I know it sounds bizarre, but it's true.
Oh no, it doesn't sound bizarre. It doesn't sound bizarre to me, and I don't think it sounds bizarre to anybody listening, because I agree that's how the universe works. And whether you want to say it works scientifically, religiously, spiritually, however it translates to each individual person, I know it works out that
Exactly.
way. That's, as I was saying at the beginning before we started talking, is that what has always been known to me in some strange way is that perception is, it's what we, I break perception down into two things, point of view and state of mind. So you're talking about the Hopi and the Catholics as the state of mind that when you pray, there's a result.
Absolutely.
Then when your state of mind is in touch with your point of view, so the point of view where you pray, you get results, and then your state of mind is in harmony with that, which is what you're talking about, bringing yourself into. Absolutely, it has to, because that's the way the universe
And that's
works.
what my whole life has been. I said now that I know that I was always being spoken to. God was always there. I was being led. Doors were opening. When I was a little kid, I wrote a letter to President Kennedy, and he wrote me back. And so it was a sort of, I just knew after that, it's like, oh yeah, the world likes me. not knowing who was pulling me and who was leading me in all these different directions. Now I do, and I'm just sort of acknowledging it instead of making it this nebulous thing. And I tell my friends, I have a couple of friends who were scientists, you know, and really into science, and I always say there's a whole lot of physics in this.
Yes.
If you pay attention, there's a whole lot of physics in this. And they're starting to believe me, which is scaring me a little bit.
You have a power. But see, that's the thing. When I first ran across you was when we were in a writer's group together, and I read about, you had written about your illness and that power and that belief. So here's your point of view that the world likes you. I mean, don't you think that has a huge impact on whatever you go through, you know, in the end,
it has
a blessing for you?
It absolutely does. I keep being told by physicians, because I still have to go and be checked out to make sure that there was no real damage done. We haven't found anything yet. And the first thing everybody says is, you lived through that. How mm-hmm. did you do it? And I knew I was going to. I was scared a few times, but again, I wasn't done. I knew I wasn't done. I knew I was being led to. The fascinating thing for me is that I used some inexpensive oils. I was into drinking a lot of water and slathering oils, really wonderful things from Africa, on my skin. And then I realized that I had anointed myself, you know, and I had baptized myself I was constantly baptizing myself and anointing myself through this thing. And I came out with no scarring, no issues, nothing. And if you ever Google Stevens-Johnson syndrome, you will see why I'm saying this. It burns you as though you'd been in a fire normally.
Oh, goodness.
And I don't have there's nothing. There's nothing.
Wow. Well, I read about your oils, and I actually use those now.
Good.
Because I said they did
what? Keep
doing
that.
I'm going.
Keep doing that. You will be beautiful. My daughter's upset because I have no wrinkles.
That's not fair.
So,
that's not right.
But all of that again was that voice telling me, go back to the old days.
Yes.
Find yourself some shea butter. Get yourself some oils. You know, drink a lot of water. You'll be fine. Just an amazing thing. So yeah, I've been loved in one way or the other in many ways throughout this journey. And it's just something I innately knew.
And that's what I would love for people to just, if they don't have that sense, I think everybody has that sense, but it gets buried beneath so much unlove, mm-hmm. Starting with unloved self. Mm-hmm. What I really hope is that people hear you and hear your voice and the love and the light coming from you and say, wow, she loved her way through all that. I could do that too.
It's in there.
It's in there.
If you will listen, that was one of the big Catholic things. One of the big ahas for me, the Holy Spirit, which people don't like to hear, but that voice that kind of tries to nudge you, it's mm-hmm. there. It will always lead you in the right direction if you just let it do that. And you can call it whatever you want. Call it spirit, call it the universe. I don't care. You have experienced it. It is in there, and it's trying to love you out of whatever you're in.
It's
trying really hard. There's a wonderful guy on I can't remember his name right now, Father Mike, who does these little videos. I write for Patheos now. And I put up a bunch of his videos because one of the things he says is whenever you pray, you're reacting to God saying, I'm here. I love you. Talk to me.
Wow.
And that's what that little thing in you, whether you, it doesn't have to be religious for you. Just remember, it's in there and it's talking to you all the time. And it usually, the good things that you do usually come from that, and you just have to listen to it more often.
Oh, it's awesome. And I know, as I told you when we first started talking, yeah, you have so many stories that we could go on for hours. But what I really want is for people to hear you and then come and find you. So where would you like people to find you?
Right now, Patheos is probably the best place. It's a BeliefNet just bought them, as a matter of fact. It's a spiritual site of all. It goes from atheism through Buddhism to everything. And it has a Catholic. I'm on the Catholicism part of it right now, which was this just came to me. It was one of those moments after I became Catholic. Obviously, everything went in that direction. Huffington Post has just changed direction completely. So you get buried there. You can still find me. If you Google me,
yes,
you will find Huffington Post. But those are the two places that I'm sort of working out of love right now. So it's mostly those two places. But Patheos is where I try to post something every single week.
Perfect. And I will have links to everything that I have found about you so on your page,
I'm all
so
over
people
the place.
Can find you.
Yes.
So, yes. So I have one last question for you that I ask everybody. So here it is. What is the one piece of advice that you would give anyone else in the midst of changing a life story?
Ooh, aside from being fearless about it, I think I just kind of told you. You
yes.
have a guiding voice. You have something in there that is trying to push you in the right direction. And, oh, this is something that there's – and you hear this in Christian churches a lot, but there's a breakdown before the breakthrough.
Yes.
You are going – when you do this, the first few months are going to feel awful. Caroline Meese said this once too. Stuff, your life's going to turn upside down. You may lose your husband or boyfriend. You know, just, it's going to feel like, why did I ask for this? What? It usually feels awful, but that's because you're being cleansed. That's because everything's being moved out of your way. People that need to go will fall off. Jobs that need to go will go. It's going to feel like you're in hell, but heaven's on the other side. So hang in there. Hang in there. Listen to that voice. Cling to it, get out of your own way, and let it happen.
I completely agree with you. Have that courage to just get through that, because I've definitely been through that cleansing. And then it comes and goes, but that big one is a big one.
For us, that's the crucifixion. There's the crucifixion, and then you get back up again.
Yeah.
And it really does. That's how it works. You will be, you know, nailed to that cross, and then suddenly it'll be, wait. Wow. I didn't know this was here. So, you know, it doesn't feel like it's good for you at the time, but it is. It's okay.
Yeah, walk with it. It's your friend in spite of how it feels.
And you're going to be stronger. One of the things that happens is when you go through all this, you'll be ready for the wonderful stuff on the other side, because you've gotten even stronger after the trials and tribulations do something for you. Even in Native American world, you go out and suffer. Jesus went into the desert. Natives go all over the place. You know, my ex actually does the Sundance, where that's the most excruciating thing you could possibly do.
Oh, I know what you're talking yes. about. Don't talk about
he
it.
Does. He does. Every year he does this for us. Oh. For us. Talk about hanging from a tree. Wow.
Oh.
it makes you stronger.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well, that's love. Okay. Well, I can't tell you how I was so excited to know that you were going to be speaking today with me. And I just thank you so much for sharing your love with people. And I can't thank you enough. Thank you, Cynthia.
I thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. This was wonderful.
Find more about Cynthia and her amazing life on her page at theshift.com/podcast or theshift.com/Cynthia Dagnall Myron or at The Shift and search for number 74. Thank you for sharing and commenting and starring this podcast wherever you listen to it. Who do you know who would love to hear what Cynthia and my other guests have to say, but perhaps don't know how to find them? Send them this way. Teach them how to find and listen to podcasts. They will thank you for it. Let's take Cynthia's point of view to heart and know that the world loves us and all will be well. And as always, it is so much easier and much more fun when we shift the story together.